Leadership is about change. If you need no change, you need no leader. In times of change, people seek out more and better leaders. Those successful, sought-out leaders embrace the following thought. Here we go. The best reformers the world has ever known are those who began with themselves. Mahatma Gandhi said, "We must be the change that we envision." Tolstoy said, "Everyone thinks of changing the world, but no one thinks of changing himself." So what I'd like to do in the beginning of this lesson, because it's on personal changes that you make in your life, is I would like to make some personal comments about personal change. And the first comment I would like to make is this: when one person cannot change another person. Now, I'm going to talk to you about an early leadership error that I made a lot. Because when I started as a young leader, I thought that a leader could change the people. And boy, did I work at it. I mean, I just worked real hard. And all right, I'm going to give them thoughts and ideas and principles, and I'm going to change people. And after several years, sadly, it took me a long time. You have to understand, I was a slow learner, okay? So after several years, one day I awakened to the thought that the only person that can change themselves is themselves. You can change yourself, but I can't change you. You see, I'm responsible to you, but I'm not responsible for you. And there's a world difference between those two. I'm responsible to teach you good leadership. I'm responsible to share things that can help add value to your life. But you're the only one that can take responsibility to change yourself. And that's what this whole lesson is about. This whole lesson is basically saying that if you don't like some of the stuff that's in your life, or if you don't like some of the things that you're doing within your life, the only person that can change that is you. Now, you can bring people around that will add value to you. You can get people around that will encourage you, be great friends, support you, walk through with you, coach you, do all that good stuff. But the only person that can change you is you. And it took me years as a leader to figure that out. Because a lot of times I think, oh man, I got to work harder. I got to be better. I got to do this more so I can get those people changed. And one day it hit me. No, John. You can create the right environment. You can certainly do the right kind of teaching. But you're responsible to change yourself. One person cannot change another person. The second comment I would make about personal change is this. Most people need to look at the way that they look at change. I put a couple of examples in your notes because I want to make sure you get this. How many times have you heard somebody say, "I sure hope things will change"? Come on, raise your hand. Okay. Oh, no, let's get real personal today. Put your hand back down. How many times have you said that? Huh? Come on. Yeah, okay, that's good. I've said it. Well, I sure hope things will change. Now, I just want to say under that kind of a quote, the only way things will change for me is when I change. It has nothing to do with hope. It has nothing to do with, well, I just hope things will change around me. No. The only way that things will change for me is when I change. Or I've heard this before, I don't know why I'm this way. Okay? Well, you are the way you are because that's the way, hang on, you want to be. Let's expose it for what it really is. Fred Smith was exactly right when he said, if you really wanted to be any different, you would be in the process of changing right now. So when I run into people and say, well, I really want to be different, I want to make some changes in my life, I say, your behavior tells me that you're not making the changes you need to make. In other words, your behavior will tell me, I don't want to know what your intention is, I don't want to even hear what your words are. If we're going to change, we need to look at change differently. The third personal comment that I would make is that when you make the right personal changes, I believe this with all my heart, other things begin to turn out right. So when people say, I like things to turn out better for me, I like the things to turn out right, I like things to turn out better in the organization or in my family, whatever it is, then what I say to them is, start with making personal changes. And this lesson's about that, because we're going to talk about 6 steps to successful personal change. But before I give you those 6 steps, one more thought. I love sports, and this is going to be too old for a lot of you, but the Baltimore Orioles used to have a manager named Earl Weaver, who continually argued with umpires in the American League. And my cousin, Rocky Rowe, was an American League umpire. And so he just gives me all these stories about Earl Weaver. I mean, all the umpires hated to go to Baltimore to ump a game because Earl Weaver's there. And Earl Weaver never stops talking to the umpires. I mean, he just rides them the whole way through. So Rocky was telling me one day, we're having dinner together, and he said, Earl Weaver, he said, his favorite comment, when you made your first bad call in a game, I mean, he just waited for you to make a, you know, call a ball a strike or vice versa. As soon as you made your first bad call, Earl Weaver would start on you. Rocky said the first thing he would say is he'd look at the umpire and he'd say, are you going to get any better or is this it? A lot of times we want to change someone else. And what we have to understand is if they're going to change, they got to change themselves. So let's talk about the 6 steps to successful personal change. And this is not for your people. This is for you. Okay? Because sometimes when I teach a lesson like this, I say, boy, I wish my people were here to hear this one. You know what I'm saying? They're, oh, man, this is so good. Why isn't Joe and Susan in the room? Man, I'm going to get this tape for them. Here, here. I want you to listen to this tape. You really need this. No, no, no. I need this. We all need this. Because is it not true in our life that all of us still have personal changes we need to make? Is there anything worse in life than go to a person who thinks that they've arrived, that they're there? So is it going to get any better? Or is this it? 6 steps to successful personal change. Step number 1, let's go. When you change your thinking, you change your beliefs. I'm going to work you through a 6-step process of how to change. And it begins with thinking. It begins with the mind. You see, beliefs are nothing more than a byproduct of what you have thought long enough about that you have bought into. Always remember that. So what you believe is something that has been previously continual thoughts that formed themselves to one day it became a belief or it became a conviction. I open the book Thinking for a Change with the 5 thoughts that are in your notes right here, because I believe these 5 thoughts absolutely with all of my heart. The first thought is this one. Everything begins with a thought. It's where it all starts. The thought is the originator of anything that happens to us. That's why Emerson said, life consists of what a man is thinking about all day. The second thought about thinking is this one. What we think determines who we are. And who we are determines what we do. That's a fact. That's why John Locke said, the actions of men are the best interpreters of their thoughts. The process is very simple. Thinking, becoming, doing. That's always the process. Thinking, becoming, doing. The third thought that I want to talk to you about in thinking or share with you this day is this. Our thoughts determine our destiny. And our destiny determines our legacy. That's why James Allen would say, you are today where your thoughts have brought you, and you will be tomorrow where your thoughts take you. Your thoughts are like a taxi. You get in, and it takes you to where you want to go. Number 4. People who go to the top think differently than others. William Arthur Ward said, nothing limits achievement like small thinking. Nothing expands possibilities like unleashed thinking. And there are basically 2 kinds of people in the world, those who think in limitations or in smallness, and those who think in creativity and unleash great thoughts within themselves. When I was going to write the book, Thinking for a Change, I sat down with the Time Warner people, as you always do when you get the idea or the concept, and you sit around a table and you bounce it around for a while. And usually I'll give them 3 to 5 pages of form of how the book is going to be conceived and the concept, the thesis, that whole process. And basically all we're doing at that time is forming it and kind of getting started the best way we can by getting other people's ideas. And when I wanted to write the book in the initial time, I didn't think of the title Thinking for a Change. In fact, that was one of the Time Warner people came up with. I wanted to call the book Thinking Your Way to the Top. Because your thinking is the seed of what you're going to become and what you're going to do. And so all change, all I'm saying here is all change begins with thinking. If you change your thinking, you'll change your beliefs. If you don't change your thinking, you won't change your beliefs. So I want to believe something differently. It starts there. Now, one more thought about thinking. And that is, we can change the way we think. I know this for true. Paul said it better than anybody. What did he say? He said, whatsoever things are true, noble, just, pure, lovely, or of good report, if there is any virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, he said, think on these things. Now, that verse is a great verse to me, because what basically it says, you can think on what you want to think upon. If you want to think on things of pure, lovely, wonderful, virtue, of all good report, he said, you can think on those things. He said, basically, you choose what you think upon. The first book I ever wrote, I wrote back in 1979, and I called the book Think on These Things. And it came right out of this verse, because I truly believe that if you think on the right things, you'll be successful. If you think on the wrong things, you won't be successful. And you can go to the success or the unsuccessfulness of a person. You can literally trace it back to how they think. Okay. You know what the number one challenge to make personal changes is? Are you ready? Feelings. How you feel. If you do not make personal changes in your life, can I tell you right now, it is because you have some feeling that dominates you. Maybe it's a feeling of insecurity. I mean, I can give you 27 types of feelings, but feelings is what keeps us from making personal changes in our life. So let me talk to you about that. Let me give you a major premise. Let me give you a minor premise, and let me give you a conclusion. The major premise is this. I can control my thoughts. That's a fact. Anybody that's ever studied thinking basically will tell you, yes, you can control your thoughts. Now, if that's true, the minor premise is that my feelings come from my thoughts. Feelings, again, are birthed out of what you think. So the conclusion is, I can control my feelings by controlling my thoughts. Because few people control their thinking, they fail to control their lives. Gordon MacDonald is a wonderful writer. I've read about everything he's written. And he has something called mental flabbiness, and there's a paragraph in there. Let me just give it to you. In our pressurized society, people who are out of shape mentally, I love that phrase, don't you? They're out of shape mentally. We talk about, man, look at him. He's out of shape physically. Oh, look at that body. They're out of shape physically. You know what I run into? I run into people out of shape mentally all the time. They're just out of shape mentally. Now, MacDonald says, people who are out of shape mentally usually fall victim to ideas and systems that are destructive to the human spirit and to human relationships. They are victimized because they have not taught themselves how to think, nor have they set themselves to the lifelong pursuit of the growth of the mind. Not having the facility of a strong mind, they grow dependent upon the thoughts and opinions of others. Rather than deal with ideas and issues, they reduce them to lives full of rules, regulations, and program. Boy, that's a tremendous statement. So I would encourage you to think big picture. This allows you to see beyond yourself. Think focused. This allows you to remove distractions. Think creatively. This allows you to get out of your box of limitations. Think realistically. This allows you to have a foundation for change. Think strategically. This allows you to have a plan for change. That's what this lesson's all about. Think possibilities. This allows you to look for and receive the best, and think reflectively. This allows you to gain a true perspective of yourself. Although not all change is the same, there is one common element to change, and that is thinking. That is a great truth. That's not mine. It's out of a book called The Seven Levels of Change. The one common element to change is thinking. When you break down the process of thinking into a manageable number of steps, you reduce the perceived risk associated with change. These seven levels of thinking require seven corresponding levels of action. Being creative is when you think about your thinking. Being innovative is when you act on your ideas. And the seven levels of thinking, I just love this. I'll give it to you quickly, and then we'll move on to the second thing you've got to do to make the personal change. But the seven level of thinking is as follows. Level number one is effectiveness, doing the right things. Level number two, efficiency, doing things right. Level number three, improving, doing right things better. Number four is cutting, doing away with things. Number five is copying, doing things that other people are doing. Number six is different, doing things no one else is doing. And the seventh level of thinking is what they call the impossible level, doing things that, quote, can't be done. Very simple. When you change your thinking, you change your beliefs. Step number two, when you change your beliefs, now you're going to see how we're building this throughout this entire lesson. When you change your beliefs, you change your expectations. Beliefs form expectations. Okay, stay in your notes. Belief is the knowledge that we can do something. It's the inner feeling that what we undertake, we can accomplish. For the most part, all of us have the ability to look at something and know whether or not we can do it. So in belief, there is power. Our eyes are opened, our opportunities become plain, our visions become realities. Our beliefs control everything we do. If we believe we can or we believe we can't, we're correct. Accomplishment is more than a matter of working harder. It's a matter of believing positively. It's called the sure enough factor. If you expect to fail, sure enough, you will. We become outside what we believe inside. And Rich DeVos said, the only thing that stands between a man and what he wants from life is often merely the will to try it and the faith to believe that it is possible. Now, we're finding that if you change your thinking, you change your beliefs. And we're finding if you change your beliefs, you change your expectations. So let me talk to you about beliefs that help me change. This is just something that works for me. I think it'll work for you too. The first thing I want you to realize is change is personal. In other words, I come to the place where I say I need to change. The second belief that helps me change is that it is possible. Not only do I take responsibility for the fact that I'm the one that needs to make the change, I have to then believe it's possible that I can change. And if I can put those two together and come to the third conclusion, I've now developed a strong belief factor for change. And the third factor is this, that change is profitable. That if I change in the right areas, it will become very profitable for me and I will be rewarded for that change. Now, change is personal, it's possible, and it's profitable. That's the belief foundation that you have to make the appropriate changes in your life or my life. So let me give you five basic beliefs that motivate me. Okay? Number one, God has a plan for my life. Please just give me a few moments to get a little bit of my personal faith in here and I'll move on. God has a plan for my life. I just believe that. Number two, I believe I can know God's plan for my life. I believe that's possible. Thirdly, I believe that God wants me to be successful. I believe He created me for greatness. And fourth, I must continually be obedient and change to be successful. And finally, number five, these are beliefs that just motivate me personally. When I grow and change, I add value to myself, others, and God. Now, those are personal beliefs that motivate me to make changes. And a belief is not just an idea a person possesses, it's an idea that possesses a person. Let me walk you through this just for a second to show you how beliefs will allow you and me to change our expectations. One of the beliefs that I had many, many years ago, it's just personal. And everyone has their own personal set. But I became convinced back in the late 70s, many, many years ago now, that I should write books. Now, I wasn't trained as a writer. I don't have a degree in journalism. But I just believed that some of the things I thought that I could add value to other people. And so I said, I want to write. And the reason I wanted to write books was because if you write books, your books go where you never go. Every day we get dozens and dozens of emails around the world of people who have just said, let me tell you what I just picked up out of your book. Let me tell you how this helped me. So I had a strong belief that I should write books. Now that's the good news. The bad news is I wasn't any good at writing books. And it was a hard process for me. And I can remember when I started to write the book, Think on These Things. I mean, I would spend a day and I would have wadded up 2 legal pads of paper where you start out and you just look at it and you say, oh, this isn't any good. And you toss it and you start again. And you kind of get excited and you look at it and say, you know, you get excited until you read it. My mother won't buy this book. That's not any good. In fact, somebody picked up my book because it's still in print. Somebody picked up my book the other day and they brought it to me and said, man, that was kind of a unique thing, writing those real short chapters. I said, nothing unique about it. I'm a dumb person. I couldn't think of anything else to say. You know what I'm saying? You know, I wrote till I ran out of gas, which was usually a couple pages, you know, and I ran out of gas. And, you know, and what's really sad is that was after weeks of thought. I mean, you know, that wasn't like, you know, I'm writing quickly and here's a little note I'll do in 15 minutes. That's after 15 weeks. I can still only do 2.5, 3.5 pages. I mean, hello. The painstaking process that I went through of learning how to write. So I had to go seek out writers. And I took a lot of time and sat at their feet and I asked them questions. How do you write? And I had to go through a long, long process of interviewing writers, taking lessons on writing, listening to tapes, changing my whole style. Now, all I'm saying is very simple. There had to be a whole process of change in my life before I could write books. But it was that belief factor that changed my expectation. My expectation was, I believe that I should write books to add value to people. And that was the motivating cause to allow me to hang in there when I was so bad for so long. I would give out a couple chapters to my friends, and they wouldn't call me for 2 weeks. They're saying something to you. Here's the way it works. Change your thinking, you change your beliefs. You change your beliefs, you change your expectations. Number three, when you change your expectations, you change your attitude. Because your expectations determine how you see things. I heard the story the other day about a man who went to the fortune teller and he looked in the crystal ball and he said, oh my, this is not good. He said, I look in this ball and he said, you will be poor and unhappy until you're 45 years old. The guy said, oh, that's terrible. He says, well, then what's going to happen? He says, well, you'll get used to it. Your expectations are going to determine your attitude, okay? And most people, they get used to average. They get used to second best. I'll have a little fun with you. Since I was making fun of my first book I ever wrote, just sit here for a moment. Let me read you. One of my chapters titles in the book was, Has Your Expector Expired? And now you can see what a deep thinker I was already. It's very obvious. It's very obvious that, you know, I'm a man that you're going to buy those books from, that's for sure. In that chapter, Has Your Expector Expired, I tell the story of my friend Joe Sawyer, who told me this cute story about a boy who was fishing one day, and the elderly man who was fishing nearby noticed that the young lad was having considerable success in his endeavor. And what was more unusual than the amount of fish that he would catch was what he would do with the fish once he successfully landed them on the bank. The boy would hold up each fish in his hand and measure it. If the fish was larger than his hand, he would throw it back in the water. He only kept the small ones. And finally, with curiosity, the old man slipped over to the young boy and he asked, son, why is it that you keep the small fish and throw the large ones back into the water? And the young boy replied, well, you see, sir, I can't keep the big ones. I only have a 10-inch frying pan. I know all kind of people in life who have a 10-inch frying pan, don't you? And they're constantly having to throw back the big ones and keep the small ones because it's the only thing that fits in to the way that they think. Nelson Boswell said, the first and most important step towards success is the expectation that we can succeed. And positive expectations produce the following six things. Always have, always will. Number one is excitement. You show me somebody that has positive expectations and you'll see a sense of excitement. Number two, conviction. A belief that something should be done. Number three, desire. Number four, confidence. Number five, commitment. Number six, energy. If I were to ask you today, how would you like to possess these six things? How would you like to possess excitement, conviction, desire, confidence, commitment, energy? Every one of you, you raise your hands, and it's very simple. To possess those six things, it's very simple. You know how you possess them? Raise your expectations. Because your expectations change your attitude. And number four, let's just go on in this process of how to make personal changes with our life. When you change your attitude, you change your behavior. Oh my. When you change your attitude, you change your behavior. William James was right when he said, that which holds our attention determines our action. Okay. Let me explain. I spoke to the NCAA coaches for the Final Four here in Atlanta. Michael McNeely is the athletic director at Indiana University. And he came over to me And he told me, he said, you know, John, I've been reading your stuff for years now. And he said, are you going to the game? I said, well, yeah, I really am going to the game. And he said, do you have good seats? I said, yeah, I have good seats. I don't have great seats. He said, well, he said, let me give you some tickets. And said, it'll be a way of saying thank you. And so my son-in-law, Steve, and I went to the Hyatt up in Buckhead to meet him after I had spoken and to get our tickets. And so he came down. We talked for about 15 more minutes. And he said, well, here are the tickets. He said, you'll be sitting with my family tonight. And so as we were leaving, Steve looks at me and says, I think that means we have good seats. Since I was the athletic director of Indiana University, one of the four teams that made it in the Final Four. And sure enough, we were courtside. Great seats. So there were two games on Saturday night, of course, and Indiana was playing Oklahoma and Maryland was playing Kansas. So Steve and I were on the Indiana side. So, of course, with athletic director right there, we were rooting for Indiana, obviously. I was born in the night, but not last night. So anyway, so we're rooting for Indiana University. We're having a big time rooting for them. And I said, Steve, I said, watch this. Look across this other side, because on the other side were the Kansas fans and the Maryland fans. Now, when Indiana and Oklahoma's playing, the Kansas fans and Maryland fans, they're over there. They're laid back. They're talking. You know, they're casually watching the game. You know what I mean? They're going out for hot dogs. You know, they're coming in late. They're kumbayaing over there. There's no energy over there. Man, now you go look at the Oklahoma fans and the Indiana, they're on their feet. You know, they won't sit down. You know, I mean, I have to constantly stand up because somebody right in front of me stand up and, you know, they'll process. And I mean, they're in the game. They're in the game. And I said, Steve, see, that which holds our attention determines our action. And the attention was being held in the Indiana-Oklahoma game by the fans, and they were all in it. The other one said, well, yeah, it's a game. Of course, you notice what happened when the first game was over and the second game happened. In our section, man, we all sat down, we laid back, we talked. In fact, Mike came over, the athletic director of Indiana University, and we sat and talked for a whole half. We were talking about, he was asking me some leadership questions about Indiana and some things he wanted to make changes there at the university. And so we were just dialoguing, we were just talking, and every once in a while we'd watch a game, and if it was a good play, you know, oh, that was nice, that was nice. Now, it's a perfect example of where we are in the fact that that which has our attention is going to determine our action. And when our attitude begins to change, when we become involved with something, our behavior begins to change. And that's an absolute fact. The reason that we have to do personal changes is that we cannot take our people on a trip that we've not made. See, too many leaders, they try to be travel agents instead of tour guides. They try to send people where they've never been. We give them a brochure, and we give them a bon voyage, and off they go, and we wave to them, and, you know, tell me how it was when you come back. A tour guide says, no, let me take you where I've been. Let me tell you what I've gone through. Let me tell you what I know. Let me show you what I've experienced in my life. I'm going to walk you through this now. And I don't need to walk you through all of this, but I believe that in changing your attitude, you have to understand that the choice is within you. You've got opportunities around you, and you've got a God above you that will help you. So if you'll just allow me to skim this, the choice within you, choice number one is you have to evaluate your present attitudes. And choice number two is you've got to think, is your faith stronger than your fear? And then you've got to write a statement of purpose. This is just basically how to change your attitude. Then you've got to determine if you have the desire to change. Then you have to live one day at a time. You have to change your thought patterns. You have to develop good habits. You have to continually choose the right attitude. You've got opportunities around you, such as you've got to enlist the cooperation of a good friend, appreciate and associate with the right people, to select a model that you're going to follow. You've got to learn from your mistakes, and you've got to expose yourself to successful experiences. And then I think that God above you helps us to make changes that we can sometimes find it very difficult to make on our own. But I'm pushing this so that I can get to number five, because number five is key in change. When you change your thinking, you change your beliefs. When you change your beliefs, you change your expectations. When you change your expectations, you change your attitude. When you change your attitude, you change your behavior. Number five, when you change your behavior, you change your performance. That's a fact. When you change your behavior, you change your performance. Leroy Ames said, how can you know what is in your heart? Look at your behavior. There's no better sign of the heart than the life. I was doing a lecture in a leadership conference, and during a break, I was doing a Q&A time, and a person came up to me, and I think there were about 1,500 in the room, and I think I'd been charged like a couple hundred bucks that day to be in the leadership conference. And so anyway, this guy, he was kind of a young guy, he came up to me, and he said, you know, he said, I've been watching you. You sit on a chair all day, you know, you drink Diet Coke and water, and, you know, when you lecture, and people laugh, and you teach these principles. He said, I've come to the conclusion, he said, I'd like to do what you do. I smiled, and I said, I understand that. I said, I got a question for you. He said, okay, and what's the question? I said, would you like to do what I did so you can do what I do? You see, this is key. You know, well, I'd like to be a Major League Baseball player. Well, I'm glad you'd like to be a Major League Baseball player. Would you like to do what they did so that you can do what they do? See, it's always behavior. If we don't make it, it's always going to be on the field of behavior. What am I doing? What am I doing? It's going to make me or it's going to break me? And it's so true with the paragraph I've got in your notes. Life isn't fair. It's not going to be fair. So stop sniveling and whining and go out and make it happen for you. In business, I see too many people who expect the financial tooth fairy to come at night and remove the ugly dead tooth from under the pillow and substitute profitability just in the nick of time at the end of their fiscal year. Huh. Isn't that true, huh? Oh, dear God, help me. God says, no, you didn't help yourself. Shut up. Go to sleep. It's just a thought. Two mistakes that we make. Number one, we wait for God to change our circumstances. And number two is we wait for our circumstances to change our behavior. I see that all the time. Well, when my circumstances get better, I'm going to change my behavior. Note, if change is not awkward, it's not change. Awkwardness is natural. If people aren't feeling awkward doing something new, they're not doing something new. I love to play golf, and sadly, when I started off playing golf, taught myself. That's a bad thing. And because I was athletic, I just thought, well, I can teach myself how to play golf. And after about a year of frustration, I wasn't any good at it. In fact, I remember being out with a real good golfer one day, and I thought, well, this will be my chance. I'll kind of humble myself and ask some questions. So after a couple of holes, and I'm in the woods, and the weeds, everywhere where you're not supposed to be. I finally looked at him, swallowed my pride, and said, okay, you've watched me play for a couple holes. I said, can you tell me what's wrong with my game? And then he was very encouraging to me because he said, well, he said, I think you got one problem. I thought, oh, hey, hello, I can, one problem I can deal with. And I said, well, what's that? He said, well, the only problem I see is you're too close to your ball after you hit it. And that is a problem. And then I said, well, what do I have to do to change that? And he looked at me, and I'll never forget. He said, you're going to have to change everything. And I said, everything? He said, yes, everything. I said, do I stand correctly? He said, no. He said, you don't stand correctly. You don't grip the club correctly. You don't keep your head. I mean, he just gave me like 27 things. In other words, he said, it's all wrong. Then I began to get lessons. Now, I'll tell you what was interesting. I found out that even after I took lessons, when I would get to a shot that was kind of important, I would go to my old grip, or I'd go to my old stance. I would fall back on what I knew, even when I knew it wasn't good for me. That's when I realized that people would rather live with old problems than new solutions. That's when I realized all of a sudden that people would rather be comfortable than correct. That people would rather stay in a routine than make the changes, even when they knew the changes were going to be better for them, because there's an uncomfortableness or there's an awkwardness involved in that process of making that kind of a change. And what I also realized was, until I could get used to living with something that was not comfortable, I could not get any better. And I found that not only true in golf, I found that true in every area of personal change in my life. There's an awkwardness, there's an uneasiness, there's an insecurity, there's a time process that's involved in that change. But here's what I know. I have to change my behavior for me to be able to change my performance. Remember this. Hey, practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes permanent. If you're practicing wrong, you don't get better. You don't get better practicing wrong continually. You just get more consistently wrong. The good news is you've got wrong down good. You know, you just say, I just do wrong well. So practice doesn't make perfect, it makes permanent. And until we go through the awkwardness of making changes that we need to, we'll never change the performance that we want to have at the end. Okay, let me review it quickly. Let me give you the last point. We're done. The 6 steps to successful personal changes is when you change your thinking, you change your beliefs. Secondly, when you change your beliefs, you change your expectations. When you change your expectations, you do change your attitude. When you change your attitude, you change your behavior. When you change your behavior, you change your performance. And 6, when you change your performance, then, and I would say only then, you change your life. That's when you change your life. Let me give you 4 closing comments. Comment 1, change makes a person feel alone, even if others are going through it. That's just very true. Even if other people are going through that change, you just feel alone in it because you say, oh, man, goodness, I know the others are changing, but I don't think they're having the difficulty I'm having. There's something about the awkwardness and the time that it takes to make proper changes that just seems to isolate you from anyone else. Even though a group is going through it together, you just kind of feel, but my situation's a little bit different, and I think I'm just not quite as fast as the other ones. And there's a tendency to have isolation, aloneness, and withdrawal when you're going through this change. Secondly, it's easier to turn failure into success than an excuse into a possibility. And have I found that to be true? A person can fail and turn around and understand their failure and make success, but I want to tell you, a person that makes excuses for everything never will see the possibility of it. I promise you, when you excuse what you're doing and excuse where you are and you allow the exceptions, you fail to ever get to that possibility. Boy, don't you know some people just have an excuse for everything? You know, why couldn't, shouldn't, didn't, wouldn't, haven't, won't? You know, if ifs and buts were candies and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. I know ifs and buts people. Don't you know, well, if this, well, but that, if this, well, hello. We could all have a Merry Christmas if ifs and buts were candies and nuts. But they're not. And to turn excuses into possibilities is an impossibility. The third comment I would make on this lesson is, and this is so true, hope is the foundational principle for all change. People change because they have hope. Can I tell you something? If people don't have hope, they won't do change. When I used to do marriage counseling a lot, if I sat down with a couple that were going through severe problems, I mean severe problems, I mean you just look at them and say, there is no hope for this couple. But they had hope. I mean they said, I think we could make it. We believe we could make it. We really want to make it. We're working on this baby. If they had hope, they could turn that marriage around. The moment I watched hope gone in a marriage, I knew the marriage was gone. When people read and they look at their situations and they look what they haven't done well and they look what's not happening well in their life, the only thing that will motivate them to make that change is the belief that it will or it can get better. Because hope is the foundation for change. And then the last thought, it's a Norman Vincent Peale thought. Norman Vincent Peale is a great man. I don't know if you ever read any of his books on positive thinking, but just time out for a second. My father understood the value of introducing me to great people. And so my father was at one time a president of a school and college. But he was an educator. He understood education, but he understood the value of getting a kid out of a classroom. And so when there was something that was great happening, he would take me out of the school, and I'd go meet people. I was in the 7th grade when in Columbus, Ohio, at Veterans Memorial Auditorium, when he took me backstage to meet Norman Vincent Peale. And I can tell you all these places in my life where I met people because he just wanted to expose me to people. In fact, when the NCAA Final Four was here, we had to breakfast down before I was going to speak to the coaches. And I took 10 of my key players in my companies, and we went down and had breakfast and got a table there because John Wooden was going to speak on the keys of life. And the guy's a brilliant thinker, and he's a master teacher. And I just wanted 9 of my key players to have the exposure of listening to a man that's not going to live very much longer, obviously because of age, just talk about the keys of life and that whole exposure. And Norman Vincent Peale had a great impact upon my dad's life. And the last comment I would make is a comment that he made. And he said, ask the God who made you to remake you. And I think that's very true in change. Many times, go to that higher help. Without God, I cannot. Without me, he will not. But you put the two of them together, and you got something awesome with change. Here's the last thing I want to say to you, and that is, you're responsible for the changes that you make in your life. But the good news is, you can make the changes you need to make in your life.